What is up, folks? It's Tuesday night, March 6th. This is episode 33 of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined by X6 Pain User, EG in Control, and filling in tonight for EG Indra is EG Machine. What's up, guys? I think, honestly, if I could have had everything gone wrong tonight, including Pain User getting shocked by his headset before the show, it happened. So I'm glad that we have, like, launched, that we are here.
Wheat, yes. I thought I told you not to tell anybody about that, dude.
Did you?
I'm sorry. It's so embarrassing, man.
Well, you know, I have to use this opportunity to point out that you are using a competitor's headset. And if you're using a SteelSeries headset, that wouldn't be happening.
I've never been shocked by my headset.
I've never been shocked by my headset either. Jeff?
I would like to take this moment to thank our sponsors. SteelSeries. I think I've got an old pair of broken Siberias laying around somewhere. Those were quite nice.
I bet they're still working too. Broken, but still working.
That's like one of the best headsets ever made, I think. It's quite nice.
That's pretty good. But no, in all seriousness, sorry about the late start, guys. And I want to thank Machine for coming on the show. Since Inside the Game, we're trying to, maybe have a little bit more insight to the game itself and some of the players, some of the games that we see. Last night, I got a chance to do some coaching with EG Machine. I know that's going to probably put a little, like, salty flavor on EG in Control since we've been talking about doing something together. But it had been scheduled for quite some time. And it paid off today. I want to say thank you, sir.
Really? Yeah, it went pretty well.
Dude, twice. I mean, I just did pretty much like I watched the replay. I did it. And I'm pretty happy, man. Nice. Thank you.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Thank you very much. But Machine joining us because, of course, Indra is at IEM. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that later on today. So how are you guys doing? In Control, the EG Masters Cup kicked off yesterday. It was nice to hear you on the mic, especially with Orb. I think he's a great caster. You guys sounded great together. And some pretty epic games, too.
Stream's not linked on Team Liquid.
I'm doing that right now.
You son of a bitch.
I needed someone to
talk. You've got one job, Wheat. You've got one job. No, I'm just kidding. I was really excited to get back into casting. It's just a lot of fun, you know. A lot of like every time I cast, it feels like people are—they're always asking, like, "Are you going to retire from playing and cast now?" It's like, no. Just like the cast, just like the Muslim's not going to retire either. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. We actually like got there at 6 and we left at 12:30. So there was a lot of freaking stuff to cast. Every match was 2-1, except for one, with Mana taking the whip to Clyde a little bit there. But outside of that, it was all 2-1s, close games, amazing series, long games. It was just a lot of fun to play, or to cast, rather. And it was my second time casting with Orb, so it was a treat.
Right on. And Pain User, how's things treating you? Been hopping on the ladder a little bit more lately?
Things are good. I will confess I've not showered or done anything today. I've been playing StarCraft 2 and Heroes of New Earth all day long.
Dude, good for you. Every once in a while, you just have to have those kinds of days, man.
And you know, it's such a beautiful day today in California. It's so nice out here.
Better reason to not go outside, man.
No, no, no. You've got to learn the nerd go outside. Like between 6 StarCraft games in a row, just like go find a nice spot outside somewhere and just lay down for like 15 minutes in the sun. It's quite nice. I will do that from time to time because I really don't go outside enough. I don't think any of us do.
You're such a hippie, dude.
I'm white as a ghost.
You are.
Outside.
Once we have monitors that auto-tan us as well.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we'll see who has the last laugh then.
Have, like, Jersey Shore StarCraft players with, like, tanning.
I didn't suggest that the monitor should spray you orange. I was just thinking that maybe the natural glow would give you a nice golden tint. You know.
Yes, the Russian stark white glow.
You pull that off well. And
dude, I can't tan. I just burn.
And Machine, thanks again for filling in for us tonight.
Thank you very much. Yeah, always excited to be here. It's good. Well, ready for today?
Yeah, uh-huh. I got a bunch of good questions. Trying to find them right now, and right. I want to thank everyone that messaged in. And there's several things we're going to talk about. Three main topics. We're talking taking some questions about StarCraft Master, about maybe looking a little bit beyond it. The GSL Finals, was it the craziest finals in StarCraft II existence? And I Am Online. I personally, you guys, I'm not sure if anyone watched I Am, but one of the things that I'd love to talk about is how MMA looked so goddamn monstrous.
Dude, like,
in all of his games. Not yet. Not yet, Pain User. Just food for thought. Yeah. Yeah, wait. That's right. Wait. Wait. First off, we're going to talk about StarCraft Master. We had someone call in, or not call in, but mail in about this. And if you don't know what this is, this is a little...
Did you see mine? Oh, my God. You'll see what I'm talking about in a minute.
You're what?
My StarCraft Master.
Oh.
I actually did it, but there's a funny story about that.
Okay. All right. Well, this Anubis has a bunch of questions related to StarCraft Master. If you don't know what it is, StarCraft Master is basically like 30 mini games that are comprised of different mechanics within the game. You go through each round. You get a portrait if you get 25. Nothing special if you get 30. I don't understand that. But anyway, Anubis asked like 10 questions. He sort of asked a slasher-esque question, so my apologies in advance. Anubis says, I think the new StarCraft Master is a pretty cool addition to the game. Have you tried the new StarCraft Master? From a pro perspective, can tools like this help people learn some basic and advanced concept of the games? Do you think this is just the tip of the iceberg? Could more tools be developed to help pro training? And were any tools like that used in Brood War? Now, I did not include the three pages that he wrote on a complex sort of scenario simulator in which, you know, one guy would have dronelings and queens and maybe a spine, and he would have to defend against four hellions perfectly, et cetera, you know, and he went into some elaborate thing as far as that was concerned. So let's reel it back a little bit. Machine, it sounds like you've played it, so we know you've tried it, but, you know, what do you think about it? Is this just sort of like a cutesy Blizzard thing? Is there something behind this, and is this the tip of the iceberg?
Somewhat, you know, it's a cutesy sort of thing at first, but it does teach some like really basic concepts as far as like maybe specific unit compositions trying to, like, for instance, there's one level where there's like two siege tanks, three marauders, and like 2 point defense drones, and you have like three stalkers.
That's around 25, actually.
Yeah, three stalkers, two phoenix, and like high templar, or two high templars, and you have to like really think out the, you know, sort of engagement beforehand. Make sure you're feedbacking the point defense drones so you're not just like throwing away a bunch of units. You know, then like also picking up the tanks, you know, blinking in with the stalkers, reducing the range. And you know, there is something behind that. It's very good. But then there's also some levels like level 30, which I think just about everyone could agree is like the hardest level inside this whole thing. If you ever were to watch a pro game where, you know, you watch like MMA sitting there picking up a siege tank against three stalkers and killing off the stalkers, like it would just never happen because that's sort of like defeating the unit AI, whereas a good player would stop the stalker attacks or something like that. But, you know, for the most part, actually, I thought it was pretty cool little concept, nice little thing Blizzard did, and I was actually extremely surprised that they would make a UMS so difficult, because this was actually tough. It took me, like, no joke, like an hour and a half to get through the level 30. I was sitting there just like grinding my teeth by the end of it. It was pretty difficult.
Let's hear from Pain User and In Control. First off, have you played it? Machine commented on the difficulty. What do you guys think?
I haven't personally played it yet. Can you just like give me a quick rundown of what it is exactly?
Yeah. So for example, right here. Yeah. So for example, right here, I'm looking at round 15. Right. I just randomly chose a round here. Okay. And in round 15, you have 10 Zealots and 2 High Templar. And what you see in front of you are 6 Stalkers and 2 Sentries. Those are the enemies, right? Okay. So the Sentry AIs throw down force fields, and you're supposed to make an Archon, bust the force fields, and beat it. right? So there's another one where there's three roaches against a bunker, and you, like, you know, burrow the roaches. So imagine they're little micro games.
Okay.
But it's pretty well executed, you know?
Yeah, I've thought for a really long time now that the StarCraft II map editor could be a powerful tool for training. And I do think that a map like this is just the tip of the iceberg. And for me, it's not about, like, this specific map might not touch on too many scenarios or micro scenarios that you would find in a pro game or anything like that. But as far as I'm concerned, like, what we have here, hold on, let me interrupt myself. Just think of it this way. Trying to, like, settle my thoughts. You got me? Okay, anyway, think of it this way. In a really competitive long game of StarCraft, you have one, two, three key moments that, in micro at least, that the game generally relies on. You're going to have some huge conflicts, and in a normal game of StarCraft, those situations only present themselves a few times. So a map like this gives you a tool that can duplicate those scenarios that are few and far between in competitive games and allows you to get repetition, practice. And that's what's super important. So in the future, if they can make the scenarios more realistic, like Bryce was saying, make the AI better and allow you to duplicate those scenarios, its potential as a training tool is, I think, unexplored. I think it could be amazing.
Well, just as an example, like, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people here saw the Muslims match against Nesty, and if you watch or Nesty or Killer, I believe it was, the Muslim has just insane Marine versus, like, Baneling control, just, you know, out of this world. And if you ask him, like, oh, where'd you learn to do that? He's not sitting here, like, just, like, getting that through playing a lot of games. He's actually someone who spent a good deal of time just on a Marine split micro map until he just kind of has it down. It's just a reaction. And so, you know, that's just sort of one instance where, yeah, it's already been proven that these micro maps do help people in specific situations, but they tend to be very common situations. You're not going to practice, I don't know, like picking up and down like a siege tank or, you know, just an example or something like that. But if it's a very common situation that you find yourself microing against every single game, maybe like just like spreading Broodlord versus like Vortex control or something like that, then it's well worth the time spent to go ahead and play a micro map like that.
And Control, your thoughts?
Personally, I just prefer to play the game. Like, if I was a professional golf player, I don't think I'd do putt-putt golf.
Yeah, but you'd go to the driving range.
Exactly.
Yeah, you do, actually.
Right, like, here, hold on. Like, okay, ZVP, super late-game situation, epic 45-minute macro game. You come into a point in the game where the Zerg has Infestors, Broodlords, Roaches, a handful of Lings. You have whatever your late-game composition is, a few Colossi, Sentry, Zealots, Stalkers, all that stuff. That situation presents itself once, maybe twice, in a 45-minute macro game. If you could find a way to duplicate that and put the two players against each other and just run it over, I'd say your Sentry, Infestor, whatever other spellcasters you may have in your composition micro is going to be out of this world after training that for like 10 hours with a really good player.
Well, and it almost begs to ask the question of, you know, what if we could just restore
save
states?
I'm too polite
states?
For you guys. I made a fucking point, and then you guys interrupt and just run me over. Jesus.
All right, then.
My point, I'm just interrupting okay. you. My point
Do
is
it.
Actually, like, yes, you made a good point. In my analogy was shit. Obviously, you go to the driving range, and you spend a lot of time doing that. But I guess the point I was trying to make by the putt-putt golf comment is that most of those levels that you spend your time doing are not really applicable. They're not things you need to work on, and you're just kind of leveling through it to get to the very few that are pointful, or have a point. So you guys are making the point, like, you can make a map where that's the scenario where you need to be working on. So yeah, I guess it's a cool concept that will be applied if you make the maps. But the other point to make here, too, is that there's a lot of situations where it's not a controlled situation like that. It doesn't actually come down to picking up a tank and dropping against Stalkers. It's actually that you're picking up a tank, and then there's also a Templar you got to dodge because it's going to feed back the medevac.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's, of course, situations where you can work on very specific micro-oriented things, but I still prefer practicing in actual battle environments as opposed to spending my practice working on a very small thing. And that, like, I apply that logic to a lot of things. Like, when I go to the gym, I don't sit and work out one very specific muscle for a long time. I work out the entire body of muscles around that because I don't want to overdevelop one thing, and because you need all your muscles to actually move things.
I see what you're saying, but as kind of just an example for myself, like, I mean, I was terrible at dealing with, like, late-game mothership, like, Vortex versus, like, mass Broodlord Infestor armies. And so I didn't want to sit there and, like, first off, most of the games aren't, that I'm playing ZVP aren't even getting to that level. But the, like, two or three in every 10 games that I was playing ZVP that did get there, I would just, like, build up, like, play, you know, extremely well up until the point where I need to go ahead and do that unit control. And then I just go ahead and just get annihilated. And, you know, I've wasted a good, like, 30, 35, 40 minutes, like, trying to build up to this one point to kind of get the practice I need against this in this specific scenario, and then, you know, just would miscontrol it. So I decided to go ahead and, like, actually sort of do that inside a unit tester against an opponent, and, you know, just sitting there and screwing around for a good 30 minutes trying to practice that specific sort of scenario, it actually did end up helping me, I must say.
I mean, obviously, just like anything, certain people, like, learn and evolve their skills, if you will, like, through different methods. And I actually agree with In Control a lot in that there's so many scenarios that a trainer could never present to you in the game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
obviously, that's the most important thing. But, you know, on the same token, I think what the guy actually asked, what Anubis asked in terms of, is this the tip of the iceberg? And now, you know, there are other micro trainers out there. In fact, the guys in chat were even talking about Dargleen's micro trainer and some other things. But, you know, I guess I was also curious, you know, would a pro ever use it to that extent? You know, it seems like you kind of have a machine perspective, you have an in-control perspective as well. You know, I just don't know that they're advanced enough to actually be like, wow, this is something that's actually increasing my skills in addition to the games that I'm playing.
Yeah, but don't you think that a lot of that has to do with A, the map maker's knowledge of competitive play, B, the map maker's knowledge of the SC2 editor in general? I mean, there's just like so many variables. That's why it's the tip of the iceberg.
Well,
if you took a competitive-minded player with the skill set to manipulate the map editor and make a fucking sick micro map, I think it would be a really good training tool. And I don't think we should be so quick to brush off specified training. I mean, yes, there's no doubt that playing StarCraft all the time 24/7 is going to make you a better player. But if you really break it down and you analyze your different skill sets in StarCraft and you isolate specific problem areas or even things that you're good at and you make them better. In every other sport, in every other walk of life, isolating specific things and training them will make you better at those things, and it'll make you better overall as a whole. So, I mean, I don't think that...
Like, there's different ways to learn. I think it's the end point you have to make. Like, if one guy is having a really tough time with something, then I guess a simulator for that very specific thing is a great way to focus down on that and work on that. But
yeah,
if I was running a team, I would spend absolutely zero time managing my team in a micro simulator. I would have them spar. Like, Korean teams don't do this. There are players that do this. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that nobody does this. I'm saying that as, like, a team, they're not required to do these kind of things because they'd rather they work organically on all the situations in a regular environment as opposed to, I now have spent 5 hours figuring out that one micro thing.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. It's not ever going to take any sort of, like, large chunk of time, but maybe someone's, you know, just suffering with a specific situation. They go ahead, spend 40 minutes into it, and at least get it down to where they understand what they're doing wrong, and then that's it. They could do the rest of the practice they need inside an actual game. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct there.
And I wish we really knew how much time the Koreans actually spent on custom maps or training anything in specific, because, I mean, I would have to imagine that Marine King has played that Baneling versus Marine micro custom map in excess of God knows how many hours, because his micro is so sick. And I feel like that's something that sets Marine King apart drastically from other players. I mean, his micro is just a cut above all the other players, and it seems like, regardless of the situation that you throw him into or how much he's scrambling, his micro is just superior than the people he's playing against. And
to get to that level, for me personally, I would just have to play micro situations over and over and over, hundreds and hundreds of times, get to that level. And I don't think that I could achieve that sort of micro just by playing on my own. I feel like it's like that.
Well,
far ahead.
You know, just kind of flipping it a little bit. You know, one of the things that Machine said is that he was surprised that they released such a difficult, UMS in this case, and it is kind of interesting. But I think that it almost is made for sort of a lower tier of players to maybe see and understand and actually perform some of the concepts that, you know, you might see on a regular basis in a pro level match, which I think is really cool. Like, I would love to see more of this stuff come out just from Blizzard, even if it's more for a casual group and not aimed obviously towards, you know, the professional teams and whatnot. But there are some cool stuff out there, and I recommend that if you enjoyed the Blizzard one just for kind of a change of pace, which I certainly did. I woke up Saturday morning and I went through it. It was a lot of fun. You could check out several other ones as well. So yeah, I don't know that we're actually going to ever see, say, like A Control said. I don't know that they'll ever be like the Slayer's training map, but. I think that's actually a question that I might ask them, you know, a little bit more. I might, you know, hey, do you guys do anything other than play? Just because
there's
pretty curious.
I mean, I don't think that there's any question that in the future we will see these map settings maps developed around training competitive players. Like, the more money that comes into this and the more intelligent minds outside of the pro community, like coaches and people that are concerned with making players better, so any coach on a team or any ex-pro who's helping a teammate or anything like that, eventually all these people are going to put their heads together, and if it is a beneficial thing, which I don't think there's any question that it can be for certain players, I think we'll see more and more of it in the future. And maybe somebody who is a competitive player that understands UMS development gets their hands on it and wraps their head around it, I think we could have something pretty cool.
If I'm not mistaken, Morrow made one as well. Are you guys familiar?
Several players have. I know that QXC did this way back in the day,
right.
Actually.
QXC had not only the unit tester map, but he also did that one where he had to move the probe around and then he had to build a base and attack. Right. Oh, yeah. And so.
And Hellion. He did a Hellion.
Yeah, I mean, the potential is certainly there.
Yeah, my point wasn't that it's not applicable. It was that I was applying it to the general concept of, like, would everyone do this?
And right.
I think you have to talk about to each their own. Like Marine King, people in the chat were talking about how he spent a lot of time actually with the Ling Baneling micro. And that's great. And then I think there's other fantastic players that's like not their bag, so they spend most of their time doing other things. And that's why, like, when we're on the subject of will this be made into like an industrious thing that pro gamers will be using on a regular basis, my opinion is that there are going to be a large number of them that would rather just play regular games.
All right. Well, StarCraft Master can be found on Battle.net. Just log in, look up StarCraft Master. I think Blizzard has like auto popped it to the most popular, mods that are out there, so you can just go find it that way. Moving on to our next topic, and a lot of people emailed in, and I mean, honestly, it's after the effects of just the whole GSL finals wore off a little bit, there's kind of, at least for me, this like what the fuck moment where there were two things that just sort of like stood out to me more than anything has in a GSL finals before, aside from Marine King just losing. The first one being, obviously, Genius on a map that statistically he should have won versus Zerg as a Protoss. Right?
Why? I know exactly what you're talking about.
He builds a shitload of carriers that die, like, horribly.
Although,
in the matchup.
That being said, you're talking about the game on Entombed Valley? Game 4?
Yes.
Four?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. That being said, like, DRG, I don't want to say lucked out, but, like, let's be real. A 3-base
timing drop, like an aggressive drop on the third, was the perfect anti-build to that kind of joke build, if you will. But, I mean, the cards couldn't have fallen any better for DRG in that situation.
I would love to have
seen that game play out and see exactly where he was going with that, because it seemed like he was going for like almost like a BGH style, like three base, three gas, turtle into mass carrier mothership type play, which, you know, who knows how that would have unfolded. I feel like we got robbed of a pretty cool game.
Did we? I mean, or Machine, what do you, obviously.
What is that supposed to do? Like, what? Let's think of all the other times we've ever seen, like, Koreans go, like, open carrier against, you know, a Zerg. The only other match that really comes to mind is MC on Cloud Kingdom, and just the same thing happened. I don't see what you really do against that. I don't know. And particularly on that map is what made it really upsetting. I could see, like, maybe a map where a Zerg would be favored or something, and he needs to whip out some just, like, odd build, but, you know, there was no reason to do that here.
There's a couple things. Like, the chat's talking about how he used it in Code A against Symbol. And
There you go.
My problem here is that there's a couple things at play. First and foremost, Entombed Valley is so bad for Zerg that you'll, on a regular basis, see Zergs do some form of a huge timing or an all-in or something to get the game frickin' over with, because they don't want to play a long game on Entombed Valley. They don't. That's been pretty tried and true. Like, the Zergs that have tried to go long macro games have found out that why that's such a terrible map for them.
My hands are in the air, fellas.
Fuck it, we'll do it re-live.
We are live. Skype sucks. I mean, I kind of feel like I would like to go off on some sort of epic rant about Skype right now. I can't, dude. I don't have the energy. I told Jeff, I'm like, I feel defeated, man. That one shitty program that once was good, that has gotten exponentially fucking worse over the past.
Oh God! Is there any other program, like any substitute?
We're gonna try to use Google Hangouts. We can keep the phones and shit for Skype. That's fine. It seems to work fine over here. It's when you do the video and start doing video and stuff. Like this is how awesome Skype is. I actually cannot resize the window that you guys are in. So what you see is kind of what you get.
Yeah.
Where it's just like Jeff's over and Payne uses window and Payne uses Machine's window and we can't even see Machine. And it's driving me bonkers. We were about to talk about or finish Jeff's point about Entombed Valley and Zergs.
Okay, so real quick. Entombed Valley is a really good Protoss map. It's a fantastic Protoss map. Zergs, because it's a really good Protoss map, much like what's that other one? Anyways, my mind just blanked. But Zergs like to all in on it, and they like to do timings. And if you're going to do something like a carrier build, which was used in Code A, it can be okay, I guess. That is uniquely the worst map to do it because, A, you're advantaged there, and, B, because you're advantaged there, Zergs are typically not going to give you the time of day to do something high-tech like a carrier build, right? So he did get out, like, two or three carriers, maybe it was three or four, but they didn't matter at all because he was getting attacked and his economy was collapsing around him, and he literally didn't have enough to kill the Roaches before they killed him. So that was the part that was most disappointing to me. Not that he built carriers, but specifically he built them on Entombed Valley, because I feel like if you're going to do something on that map, that should be, like, a lot of thought went into it, a lot of practice went into it, and you're like, well, this is what I want to do on this map. And maybe that is the case. Obviously, you know, I don't know Genius. Maybe that's exactly what he was thinking. And he just rolled the dice a little bit because Dong Regu and a lot of other Zergs think they have to all in on that map to win. And if that's the case, then I don't like the decision to go carrier on that map. And it actually kind of killed my, like, it killed my excitement for the entire best of seven, because that map, he can't get back, right? He had to play.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I was just, it was so frustrating.
Yeah. And just based on what you were saying, I was wondering maybe if he took all of the factors that you were talking about into consideration and then decided just to go ahead and do it anyway because of all that.
That's very possible as well. You're absolutely right. Some people
and based on his play and what he did throughout the entire series, that seems like Genius's MO. It's like, I mean, I'm amazed at the fact that he was able to get as far as he did, because the way that Genius plays, and I've thought this since his original BlizzCon win, you know, it's just kind of like, what? Like, he doesn't have that macro style of play where you kind of adapt to whatever your opponent throws at you. In a way, it seems to me like Genius really relies on a lot of those tech switch opportunities with Protoss, and it's just like his train of thought. I'm not surprised that he just went ahead and did something like that, because honestly, zero Fs given in Genius's metagame.
But one thing we haven't discussed, guys, is the really simple concept of the fact that you're playing for the largest prize purse that currently exists in professional StarCraft II right now. For a single series to play through, that's the part that seemed a little shit, this is what I'm going to do, despite the fact that it's his MO or not. You know, and maybe that still didn't faze him at all. Maybe it was the fact that they were teammates added a dynamic that we'll never know about. But that was the other part I wanted. So I saw you shaking your head, Jeff, so I'd love you to comment on that. The other thing I kind of want to comment on is, did anyone else find the DRG going into Genius's booth, really... found that to be ridiculously uncomfortable, because I was like, dude, if I was Genius, I think I might start throwing fists. Like, that would mentally, I just don't know in what fucking universe is that I just kicked your ass. I'm going to come over there, give you a nice, sarcastic pat on the ass. And
I mean, okay.
Go ahead, Fanger. Go ahead.
All right. To touch on that, I want to just – I noticed – a bunch of things inside and outside of game that these two are obviously very close teammates. You could see it in their play. I mean, for Christ's sakes, the game on Daybreak, they have things timed out so well to the point that, you know, DRG sees Phoenixes. He immediately counters, but he already has Burrowed researched, knowing that there's not going to be an Observer or a Robo. So he commits to a push, and then they kind of get into this stalemate phase where, you know, there's Burrowed Roaches on the ramp, and he's trying to inch his Roaches up, but there's enough sentries and enough force fields to hold it off for the duration to get Stalkers up. And those timings don't just, happen in a game like that. Like, they had obviously played out situations like that before, and it seemed like they knew each other's playstyle really, really well, and you could see situations where that happened. And then, obviously, outside of game, the very friendly back-and-forth kind of banter. But you can't bring the practice house environment onto the stage of frickin' GSL.
Right.
I mean, and that's really what it felt like. I mean, you know, it felt like DRG kind of, you know, running over after a game at the practice house and being like, oh, you know, hey, sucks you lost in the grand finals. Like, here's your military jersey. I just owned you. Ha, ha, ha. Like, and you could tell Genius wasn't exactly, you know, flattered.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, what do you do in that situation, right?
You're like, I know. I mean, what do you do?
Do you
right?
look like the asshole and be like, dude, get out of my booth?
In our culture, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
If that shit go down in at an MLG or something, and it was between two North American players, words would have been exchanged for
we
sure.
We actually on State of the Game got to interview Nesty, and I kind of asked him about manor muling and a little bit of the, you'll see players dance zealots. There's a little bit more of that, I think, in Korea. And he answered that it's a cultural difference. Like, they don't actually take real big offense to those kind of things. They do it for the fans. And I can understand that, because a lot of times Koreans are fairly introverted. They don't have a whole lot of, they're not really expressive that much. Not as much, I guess, as their Western counterparts. So for them to do those kind of things, it's much more exciting for Korean fans, and the players kind of get it. What I would say about what happened at the GSL is, that's on the league. That's on GSL. Like, they should have rules where you don't leave your booth until the games have all been played, and you specifically don't go into the booth of your opponent. And it's not because it's going to create this horrendous situation. Like, Genius was upset, obviously, but it didn't look like he was going to try to kill him. He didn't flip him the bird or something like that.
Right.
It's just that it looked awkward, and it just looks strange. So for a lot of their audience who doesn't know if they're okay with it, we're gonna project our opinions on it. And that's why we're sitting here being like, It looked like it was so awkward and strange, and Genius is put in this awkward place. But who knows? Maybe Genius was just really sad, but they had planned that, and Genius is totally okay with it. We don't know, though. So that's why it's on the league to actually make rules that don't allow you to do that. And that's where it goes for me. I mean, obviously, if we're speaking like ethos or something like that, then they shouldn't do that, but whatever.
Well, even in any sort of North American league, I can't imagine that would be accepted.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, if we're going to go cultural, too, I mean, like, non-Koreans, oh, my God. I'm trying to imagine someone coming over to Greg at the end of it. I can't even, like, it could be Bryce, you know, one of his best friends in the whole world, and I think Greg would actually tear his stomach out through his stomach. Like, he would just punch him in the stomach and rip it out of him.
Yep.
He would have the rage to do that.
Oh, yeah, he would.
But, I mean, it seems to me...
That's the thing. That's the funny thing. And then he ripped his stomach out.
And then he went.
It seems to me that regardless of culture, it's still a slight in a way, right? I mean, I don't think it's necessarily like something we can break down into like a cultural difference. I mean, I feel like DRG was kind of just caught up in the moment, and he was
probably, obviously
feeling pretty cocky, and he just won a crap ton of money, and he was kind of being a dick. And
but I mean, it happened like multiple times. That was the thing that was like, you know, maybe after the Carriers one, you're like, okay, yeah, that was cheeky. I go over there, be like, nice try, buddy. After every game he won after that, it was like, yo, bro, it's getting a little old.
Yeah. It was weird. It was weird. Like, Koreans are just, they have a tendency to be kind of awkward anyway. So it was just he opened the door and like scuttled over there and like kind of struggled to the door and then opened and came in and like flopped his arms around and like, and then like ran out smiling. It was just like,
all right.
If you're gonna do something weird, it's got to be just absolutely amazing. Like, he needs to pull out a shirt gun and start blasting the audience with, like, Dong Regu shirts or something like that. That would be cool.
Now, going back real quickly to wrap this up, I had mentioned also the concept of, you know, why do you do that when you're playing in such an important finals like that in control? You seem to agree with that. Can you close us off with this for, you know, kind of your thoughts on that and why?
Why you do it, you said?
Why would you do it in an arena where – you know, $85,000 is on the line, et cetera.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's so many mind games going on that's why it's like, it's our job to speculate on this and to talk about potential reasons why it was good or bad. But at the end of the day, it is just speculation. There is so much going on there. Who knows how much Genius and Dong Regu practice together? Like, they are best friends, but they're also top of the line competitors.
Yeah.
So I actually, like, let's give some transparency. There's a lot of teams that have top players on it. They don't actually practice together because they're actually helping their potential opponent beat them in the future. So that's one hypothetical. The other one is maybe they play all the time and they absolutely know each other like in and out. So they have to do things that are really offbeat and different. Like, maybe Dong Regu has lost every single game against Genius playing completely standard on Entomb Valley. So, I don't know. Genius thought he would flip it up, you know, and maybe think Dong Regu was going to do a super greedy macro build, you know. So those are the kinds of reasons that are going to circle around things like that. And when you have two players like that, like Dong Regu, arguably the best player on the planet, Genius, at least results-wise for right now, one of the best ProDOS players on the planet, right? I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, this looks like a mistake to me, but I'm probably not understanding half of what was going into that.
And we can't. Like, for all the people that are saying, you know, like, oh, they're best friends, and obviously it was friendly. I mean, Genius knows that there's tons of cameras on him, there's tens of thousands of people watching, and if he gives a smile or like a nod in response to something like that, we have no idea how Genius perceived any of that.
Right.
So we can only speculate on that. And then as far as them being best friends, like, yeah, I've got a best friend too, and sometimes we piss each other off to the point where we almost throw fists. I mean, it's not like best friends don't have confrontation. And
of course,
a lot of times best friends are competitive, and they push each other to the next level. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we should really read too much into it, to be honest.
No,
I'm
it's just odd, you know.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about, like, the the game. Sorry, go ahead.
No.
But what did you guys think about like the games themselves and like the styles that the two players used and the builds that they used, like just over the course of the series? Like what, you know, that I want to talk about that. If nobody else.
Well, I mean, except for the carrier build, I think let me just sort of like leave that one out. But you know, what do you think? What are your thoughts, Pain User? Kick us off.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not surprised by the result. I feel like Genius's game has a lot of holes in it. I think he really relies on a lot of kind of like tricky stuff. I mean, I know everybody's saying he's a really tricky player, he's super tricky, but that's really what he relies on to win games. And it seemed to me like, well, he won that game too with the crazy Blink Stalker all in that went unscouted when he like canceled the fourth gas after it had been scouted by the Overlord. So, and that was like the one game where he was like super offensive, but then in all the other games it seemed like he was playing a super defensive style. It was either like one or the other. He wasn't really willing to get into the mid game and trade blows with DRG. It was like, oh, I'm gonna hide two Stargates and build a bunch of air and then surprise you and win, or oh, I'm gonna hide Blink Tech and cancel a gas and then I'm gonna hit you at this timing when you have no idea what's coming and I'm going to seal the deal that way. But it really seemed to me like Genius was very reluctant to get into like a blow-by-blow macro game with DRG.
Well,
and you really didn't see it throughout the entire series. So it's like, I feel like if you go into a series and you can't, and you know you can't best your opponent in one comprehensive macro game, all things being equal, it's like, you play differently. And I know when I'm playing against an opponent that I just know is better than me, I'm going to do some cheeky, retarded crap. Just because I know I can't beat this guy in a straight-up macro game. And I feel that's kind of what we saw a little bit.
Let's then get both a Zerg and a Protoss perspective on this. And Control, why don't you start with a Protoss perspective?
What was he saying?
Just on sort of the whole idea that maybe Genius knew that he wasn't going to be able to best DRG, and especially in like a heads up macro game, so that's why he sort of chose to go specifically with the builds that he went with, which were a lot of hide and attack, etc.
That's just Kree right now. DeMuslim was talking about this. I can't remember where he was talking about. He was kind of just talking about how the Koreans were gabbing at MLG Arena just about how Protoss is extremely two-based timing-oriented right now. It's either that or they do some kind of really edgy all-in. And that's what they believe they have to do to win the game for right now. And if you see a Protoss game that goes to the late game, of course it's like, that's not the rule, right? There's not 100% that's exactly what they do. But that's the dominant strategy mindset right now. So Genius going into this series against the best Zerg on the planet, I don't think he's going to go off the beaten path and start doing long macro games against, especially when like the entire climate around his training is we have to do two base all ins for the most part. That's the most winning strategy.
And Machine, from a Zerg perspective, you know, knowing DRG and the fact that he does play a very macro oriented game, is that what you think Genius should have done? And then as Zerg, how do you deal with that?
Well, DRG looked pretty darn strong in the whole series. I do agree that I think it probably was Genius's sort of best mentality to have possibility of winning going into the series, but he kind of took it a step too far, as we saw, obviously, with the Entomb game. And two-base timings are pretty tough for your typical Zerg to sort of deal with, but Dongregu once again isn't really like your typical Zerg, so I think he should have sort of done a mixture between like two base timings and obviously like macro sort of esque games, but once again it's also easier for me to say that. There's probably quite a deal more that we're not quite seeing under the surface as to why he decided to go ahead and make those decisions.
The thing that I found kind of weird was that it seemed to me like he was bringing it out towards the end on Metropolis. That was like the first game where he really tried to take a third, play a straight-up play a straight up macro game, and he got absolutely picked apart. I mean, his troops were completely out of position. DRG forced him into the third, and then ran by in the main.
It's a huge macro map. Like that map, it screams macro because there's like four bases connected by two very narrow chokes. So if you're Terran Protoss, and even Zerg now with their Spinecrawler play, it's like if you don't play macro there, then you're very much so trying to take you're trying to abuse the fact that people play macro there. So it's very often that the slots just kind of line up and people play massive macro games there.
And I wonder, you know, play the what if game, if he would have just played, you know, sort of in a standard, more standard fashion, would it have, would he have been able to do it? I don't know.
What'd you guys think about the base trade scenario on Metropolis?
I thought that was pretty...
Makes for exciting games.
I meant like his Genius's handling of the situation, like from a Protoss perspective. He pushed cross map, and then they forced into a base trade situation, and then he brought back his entire army.
Right? Yeah. Oh yeah, I remember that.
To deal with the Mutalisks in the main, he brought back the Zealots, Colossus, Sentries, everything to deal with the Mutaflock in his main, and thereby allowing DRG enough time to just get a whole nother swarm of Ling Muta up. But I felt like that was like a pretty, I don't want to say rookie move, but like, I don't know.
It's tough. I mean, like, I'm sure Genius would know above all else that like when you're moved out in that situation, they do a counter like that, you're committed. All you can do is either like on 1 year basis, make up a jillion cannons. And if you've got the abilities, some Templar and make a stand there, but otherwise your army is now this like roving death ball that has to clean up the entire game. Right. That's like what every Protoss knows, but I can tell you from experience, man, and I don't know that this is what happened to Genius, but that is what we know. But then when the game gets going out there, you have to make split decisions. Like, you can't partially send your army back and then decide to go back out. You send your army back and you're like, fuck it, I'm going for it. Like, if I can kill that army, if I can still have two mining bases, and this army can't get stopped by him, then I can go on to win this game. Like, that might have been what he thought, and it ends up being completely wrong. But we're staring at full, perfect information, and we're like, what are you doing? And afterwards, maybe Genius goes, I don't fucking know. You know, who knows?
Damn
it. Well, either way, the whole season of this particular GSL was great. We've got Code A still going on, and then the of course, it going into that. But, you know, those were just two aspects that I thought that it would be appropriate for us to talk about. And we are kind of like gabbing over, and it didn't help that I had a crash there. So let's move on to our next topic, guys. And that is going to be the IM World Finals. And talk a little bit about the strats, talk a little bit about what we've heard of over there. I want to talk a little bit about what I saw this morning as I was up all day. It's one of the reasons why I'm also defeated and delirious is that I've been up since 2 a.m., and even beyond that. But let's first, Machine, you were kind of like talking about it because it is funny and some people, well, I don't know if we want to call it funny. But I think it's kind of like, I don't know. For me, I'm going to call it standard as far as Europe is concerned, right? So have you guys seen the pictures of these like small rooms that these guys are staying in? I don't know that I can actually...
Yeah. Coffins,
bring one up, but I mean they're small, man. This is actually pretty typical. I've been to several events in Europe, and let me just tell you that I never went to Europe because I'm like, man, I can't wait for their great hotels and all the good stuff they got going on. No, I never did that. So I'm trying to. I don't know if it's actually. If it's it's somewhere here. It's going to be on Reddit. I'll try to find it. But this is, like I said, it's pretty typical. I mean, you guys have done European events, right?
Here's the thing. IEM actually posted an official response. And, of course, not word for word, so, you know, go read it yourself. But the general idea is, like, they're saying, listen, we host this at CeBIT every year. It's a absolutely massive convention for essentially like it's not esports. It's like electronics. It's kind of the electronic world, basically. And there's 500,000 people. I think there's some huge number of people in the town, and then there's something like 300,000 people that come into town for that convention. Apparently, it's just this absolute massive convention. And they said specifically the reason they host their world finals there is because they want to bring StarCraft II/esports, so, you know, all their other games as well, to more people, to a larger audience, and that's why they host it there. So if that's the winning argument for you, and they also said they spent, I think they said, it's either, I saw two numbers, it was either $70,000 or $120,000. They spent a lot of money. Because what hotels do is they hike up the prices around that time.
Yeah, big
because
time.
Because they know everyone's going to use it. They absolutely know everyone's going to pay it. Here so they hike up the prices, and then IEM pays it. And they said they spent, I think it was $120,000 to get these players and their managers accommodations. So that's the climate for this. Now my opinion is as follows. Like, I don't think players deserve to be in 4 or 5-star hotels and carted around on you know, giant swans or something like that. But I do think that this climate is not conducive to I don't know. Like, I'm kind of hesitant to say this, but I think it's kind of a shame. I think it's cool that it's being exposed to so many people, but if I'm kind of a fragile player who's, like, already kind of jet-lagged from traveling, and then I can't sleep a comfortable night at this tournament, and I don't play very well because of that, then my team kind of sucks in the situation because they lost money sending me. My career's, you know, going to take a jab here because I didn't perform very well. And people don't look at a player and see them do poorly and go, well, they had terrible living conditions. They go, LOL, you stupid nerd. That's part of the game. You're supposed to deal with that. And it's like, it's really tough. Like, there's actually those comments circling around. Like, there's people who are, like, vindictive and mad about it. They're like, how dare you complain about that? Your job is to overcome those conditions and play StarCraft. Like, and it's so I don't know. In that situation, I don't really like it. But the reason I'm hesitant is you weigh that against what IEM is doing. Does this actually expose a lot more people to StarCraft II? Does it grow our community? Is it really good for everyone? If that's the answer, then and you're weighing that against player comfortability, their accommodations. Then I guess I'm siding with IEM. Like, I think that's pretty good. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you guys say.
I tell you that I've stayed in my fair share of European hostels before, man. And, like, the fact that it actually appears as if there is a sink and some, you know, form
next,
of a
like,
bathroom
over the
in there,
bed, yeah.
That is amazing. Because let me tell you that the first time that you have to use a shared bathroom and it's like 2 stories down and 500 yards away, and when you go inside, it smells like the bog of eternal stench from the labyrinth, where if you actually get, you know, if you actually touch the bog, you will smell that way forever. That's what I felt like. This is like dream.
There's some guy in the chat who's like, Jesus, book a room for yourself then. I love comments like this. Like, the community, like, listen, if you're going to voice an opinion, educate yourself. There's literally no rooms. There's none. This is a European student hostel that IEM was able to get for their players on a hiked-up price that is terrible. It's just horrendous living conditions. And you need to ask yourself which is, like, more important to you, because that's what IEM essentially said. They didn't say, we're really sorry, next year we'll fix it. Nope. They said, this is what you have to deal with because we're going to try to grow esports in this way. And if you side with them on that logic, great. If you think that it's stupid, that's a valid opinion as well. But don't say stupid shit like they should set up tents or get their own hotel rooms. Like, come on, let's use our heads.
For me, I mean, I guess it all just depends on where you're coming from, right? I mean, those living quarters could be nice to certain people. I've certainly lived in similar situations, not with the sink and the toilet in the room, though. That I don't know if the toilet's actually in the room.
Oh, wait, didn't you know the sink is the toilet, pain user?
Well, I mean, honestly, it depends. The main thing here is noise factor, right? I mean, as long as he's got a bed and a place to sleep and hopefully a quiet environment, then you can excel. But, I mean, if there's tons of noise and you're having difficulty sleeping and it screws with your game, or even just through your discomfort, if it screws with your game, if you get nervous, if it's not accommodating enough, then you know, I guess I can understand. But at the end of the day, IEM had a crisis situation. They needed to deal with it. They had to get something done, and they did something. I mean, you know, what?
I'm liking Greg's attitude about this whole thing, by the way. He's making some funny-ass tweets about
it. Yeah,
I
was like, wait a second. We got a whole jar of Nutella, man. What are you talking
about? It's like a choose-your-own-experience novel. He's like, do I stop the fire hazard, or do I run 20 feet down the hall to take a pee? That's good stuff. I mean, yeah. Europe does have different conditions than we're used to in the United States. Because I'll tell you what, even at Home Story Cup, I stayed at the same common hostel that everybody else stayed at. Uh-huh. And it's nowhere near as bad as that, so don't get me wrong. It was totally fine. But it was pretty funny because you got like a flat mattress that was like an inch and a half thick on a board, one pillow, one blanket, and then your sink was the mirror like in the room. And then the bath, the shower, was this like plastic cylinder that you stepped into. And I'm a big dude, obviously, so I actually could step in there. I could turn the water on. I could, you know, scrub myself, and then I could like slide out sideways. And that was pretty much all I could do. So it was kind of a funny experience in that way too. Like I was like, wow, this is very different. And then like I bet it's pretty funny for Europeans because you go to an MLG at like a Gaylord or something like that, and it's like this giant like metropolis with
fluttering
around,
like, alligators and shit.
Different.
The biodome. the enclosed biodome.
Those things are pretty insane.
They're so over the top. It's like everything that's ridiculous about our culture.
All right, so enough about that. Let's talk a little bit about the competition itself. Group A and Group B both played today. I bring up the results, if you do not want to know the results, you should probably look away now. And keep in mind, for this competition, top prize is $35,000, which not too shabby. I mean, long road to get here, right? So anyway, we of course had Group A, and then we had the fucking Protoss group of death that had the one like sad and lonely Zerg in there, Nurchio. Let's talk about Group A. You guys, MMA went 5-0, 10-0, didn't drop a map. I don't feel like, actually I do. There was one time where I was like, oh, here it is. Finally, MMA is going to drop that map. It's coming right. And then all of a sudden, he's marching across with his bio force, and he's just like, and he's just stutter-stepping his way to fucking victory. And I'm like, dude, like, I actually, the guy is so good, he makes me want to play Terran because, like, I watch him, and I feel like, oh, my God, if I play this race too, I'm just going to beast everyone.
I got that feeling from Sok versus him on Entombed Valley. Sok actually ran over his army, killed his command center.
That's exactly the one, like, I think. Yeah.
Ahead.
Is that the one where he pushed with like a few tanks at the end and bio?
No. Well, I don't know about the end, but he pushed with tanks, went back home, sat, got destroyed. And then Sok like had two Banshees killing tens of probes back at home, so he decided to go home on move command. And he gets ambushed, gets a Colossus picked off, loses sentries, loses zealots, and it was just gimp for the rest of the game from there. But it was like, I think if Sok plays that game out how he does 9 times out of 10 in any other match, I feel like he wins pretty handily. But the other part here, too, is that MMA, like, somehow is always ahead in supply at all times, no matter what dies. He is playing at a different level than everybody else. And it's reflecting in both map score, but also, obviously, final result in that group. 5-0, 10-0. I do want to say this, though, like Violet's stepping his game up. He's playing a lot better, so it's really cool to see him in that number two slot. But the other, like, top dog in that group is JYP, and his matchup versus Terran is known to be his weakest. And then Sock's pretty good, you know, Killer's pretty good, and Straylock's pretty good, but I don't know if any of those guys were ever really a challenge to MMA to begin with.
Yeah.
So this was a pretty good for MMA. Like, there's a lot of Protoss, Korean Protoss that could have been in there outside of JYP that I think would have given MMA a tough time, but JYP is probably not it.
And then, any comments on Group A matches, guys? I mean, MMA, we were talking about it earlier, Pain User, and you wanted to comment, but I was like, you got to wait. You got to hold on to it. About MMA.
Oh, I mean, that was the game that I was going to comment on. I mean, that was just ridiculous. I mean, he deals with adversity better than almost any other player I've seen.
Yeah.
And he's able to scramble and somehow come out ahead in situations where it's just like, Me personally, I would be toast. And his ability to just throw a Band-Aid on terrible situations and then somehow come out with the W is just uncanny. And that was the game on Entombed, I think, that he won at the very end by pushing Sox base with like a hodgepodge group of bio with no medevacs and three
yeah,
or four.
Yeah, that was like already stimmed to shit. And it, yeah, and he's still
no medevacs and like a handful of bio. But to be fair, at the end there, Sox, I mean, got forced into a really, really bad bottleneck situation and kind of had to throw away his entire army. But yeah, I mean, MMA is just, he's a very well-rounded player. And the thing that really sticks out to me about MMA is, like, I don't know, if you look at a player like MVP, he has, like, a very succinct style that he uses. And his macro is just amazing, and that's what he relies on a lot of his games. I mean, he cheeses sometimes in the early game. But MMA has some pretty unique gameplay styles that other Terrans don't necessarily utilize. Like, he has a lot of weird proxy rush builds and kind of crazy all-in timings, and I mean, he's just all over the place, but he's very well-rounded and he continues to post outstanding results. So I don't know, man, he's a scary player to figure out, because I mean, it just, it's very tough to even wrap your head around what he's going to throw at you in a series.
He's a favorite for the tournament, you know.
Oh, absolutely,
no doubt about it.
I mean, and the way he played in Group A, you know, it'd be silly not to consider him a contender for the tournament. But yeah. I would agree with you in control on Violet, being, along with Killer, the only Zergs in the group. And this was a pretty balanced group in terms of two Terran, two Zergs, and two Protoss. Zake leaving actually was a major blow just for the competition itself, you know, because it takes place in Germany. In previous IEM events that have taken place there, Zake's had a outstanding like audience support and fan support there. But of course, one German over on the B side does get through, and he played very well as well. As we shift over to Group B, unless Machine, any comments on Group A before we shift over? Group B.
No, MMA is going to win it.
Okay. Got it. All right, Group B, Hasuab had some really, really phenomenal games throughout the day that we got to see on the stream. Of course, not everything was shown. And Grubby actually has a really sort of underperforming, I guess, performance after, I wouldn't say having a great run, but maybe a good run. Like, it was like, oh, look, you know, Grubby's like finding his footing. That footing was like someone came in and just sweep the leg, Mr. Lawrence.
Well,
do you have a problem with
the group's
that?
A little bit deceiving. Like, a lot of players, a lot of Protoss players really don't like PvP because it's got a lot of
course,
a lot of problems, and not necessarily problems, but the matchup's very difficult to be very consistent and great at, I would say. I think it's weak, not to speak for Grubby, but I believe it to be his weakest matchup. And if you look at that group, it's all Protoss, and then the one Zerg is Nurchio. So it was kind of a group that you're walking into where it's like, okay. You've got the odds stacked up against you. I think the bigger upset for me is how poorly White Rod did in there, actually. And again, right. Poorly, I guess, is too severe of a way to say this, but White Rod is the caliber of player where any group he goes into, no matter who's in it, you expect him to be in the top three or four at least. And he's in the bottom half of this group. But I do want to say this, too. Again, kind of a tip of the hat to Elfie. The guy's a freaking PvP specialist in this group, got handed to him on high, and he placed really well, defeating MC in there and doing great for himself. I'm also happy for Hasselhoff, a friend of mine who's been playing really good games recently. I got to see him last night in the Masters Cup, and to see him place in the top three here is pretty fantastic.
Yep, especially taking place in Germany. It's good for him.
Hey, Machine, how would you like to be in that group?
With a bunch of Protoss, yeah, right.
Is that like what you wake up in a cold sweat? Like,
cold sweat.
Oh my god!
I'd love it if Greg was the one Zerg in there. That'd be so.
Oh my god, no, dude. That would be the most unhealthy thing.
What have I done to deserve this?
Well, you know what? I mean, the other side of the groups, which are going to be played starting tonight at 3 a.m. EST. Is the Korean group of death, and then Group D, which is just kind of a hodgepodge of great talent from really like the most, I guess, the melting pot of the competition, and also being a nice, evenly distributed. Really, Group B, the only one that was poorly distributed, by the way it turned out. EG Puma, Damaga, Mana, Killer, Xenio, and Select. And, you know, you had mentioned some of the players that you were surprised not moving on. Like, tomorrow, I just can't even believe that only three of these players are going to continue on.
Yeah.
Mana's dangerous in there. Mana has, in the past, beaten Puma in really important matches. Now, of course, that is the past, so who knows what's going to happen now. But Mana's PvP is legit. His storms are some of the best you'll ever freaking see. I think he's got a really good shot at Select. He does suffer in the PvZ department. Unfortunately for him, there's actually two Zergs in this group that are really good at... I mean, they're really good in general, but they're especially dangerous. ZVP. And then, like, a couple of other interesting storylines is Damaga going to get in the top three of this group? This is a stacked group. There's not a single player in the group where you look at it and you go, you know, he really doesn't have any chance. Actually, I could see any three of these guys being in the top. Obviously, as an EG guy, I'm pulling for Puma. And then, if I was to put my betting hat on, I would throw a Zenyu up there. He's been playing on fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
That third spot is highly contested, but I would say... Like, I would give the edge to Select, but I could see Damaga, and then like, the crappy answer for me is, like, Mana or Killer could absolutely be that number three spot, too.
You guys got any comments on Group C?
Depends on what a matchup Select's been practicing for this tournament, I guess.
Yeah.
It's perfectly balanced, so the joke's on him.
I know, right? Yeah. I don't know. Damaga always surprises me, so I'd have to say Damaga gets top three.
Like, he's such a consistent player. What do you think? Puma, Mana, Zenyo would be my top three.
It's going to be a tough one.
For sure. And
I believe there'll be at least one upset in that group. Like, someone who we expect.
I've
got to give Puma the edge over Mana, just because, I mean, his TVP is raw.
You know, I've actually seen Mana defeat Puma in the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup.
Well, there you go.
In the ace match, I believe, in the top four.
Land's a little bit different. Puma
totally,
at Land.
Totally.
Pretty
scary dude.
Monstrous player, yeah.
don't want to meet him in a dark alley? Absolutely. and by the way, on Land, of course, like... Hypothetical.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I was just, you know, before I'll just be like, what land? God, Jeff, you think 50 milliseconds is land? Where are you from? The United States? Group D, of course, we've got Idra, Dark Force, our two Zergs, our two Terran or Supernova, and Cass. And the two Protoss are Real and Feast. And again, I kind of feel like Group D is this sort of superstar hodgepodge. Melting pot of great players from around the world, including two German, including a German, two Koreans, where Feast is from Belgium, right? Yeah, and then Cass, of course, being from the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Feast is from what do you got? What do you guys think? Where's Idra? Where's Idra gonna fall on this one, guys?
First, no problem.
No problem.
That must, as long as he like doesn't end up playing either Real or Feast or Cass or Supernova, what? He's got top one.
As long as he doesn't play anyone in his group,
it's
he
round
would
robin. Dead. But
nah, I don't know. Supernova's good.
Yeah,
that's gonna be tough. But at the same time, Cass's TVT is just amazing. So I could see if I was a betting man, I'd say Supernova or Cass takes first in the group.
It's a scary group. Like, obviously, being an EG guy, I'm looking at that group, and I'm looking at my buddy Greg, and it is terrifying. Now, I'll say this, like, Idra at MLG Arena had said that he really has been playing, he feels like he's been playing great, and at Arena, he really felt like it was going to be his breakout tournament, and then he ran into Oz and Nestia. That's a pretty, I mean, flip that around, but that's a pretty gross 1-2 punch, you know. Don't flip that around. It was Oz, then Nesty. But anyways, that's a brutal couple of players to play, so we didn't really get to see what Idra's talking about. Now, in this group, his top competitors are like a Supernova and a Cass, and then, of course, everybody else in that group is no slouch at all, but those players I feel like are more manageable for Greg. The kind of, like, universal humor that's going on here, the tragic ending of this is that Cass is actually in Idra's head quite a bit.
I was going to mention that, actually.
Yeah, he's played Greg a bunch, and I don't think he's ever lost. He's one of the best foreign Terrans, so certainly he's already a good player.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a foreign Terran that knows how to get under Greg's skin and really, like, he'll do those abusive builds that Greg pretends doesn't exist because he thinks they're, like, cheap shots or something like that.
Yeah.
So he's dangerous, and then Feast is known to be kind of an all-inny type player, which is exactly what Greg is worried about. And then if you were to take, like, the Korean version of Feast, that would be Real. Yeah. So Real is, like, Real is known for his all-ins as so a Korean Protoss, which makes him even grosser. And then there's Dark Force, who's actually, like, constantly underrated. I think Greg should take that match, but I wouldn't, like, I wouldn't jump out of my seat and like, scream to the heavens if Dark Force won, because he actually surprises people. And then he you follow does, up yeah. with Supernova. The nice thing about Supernova is I really don't think of him in terms of TBZ as some of these really top Terran players. And that's just my opinion. For better or worse, I could be a giant idiot about that. That's totally fine. But I think Greg should be able to take out Supernova if he faces Supernova at a time when he's not already mind-effed by some of these other guys that are, like, unfortunately set up to do Greg serious harm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, either way, the way that tomorrow is going to play out is certainly going to be a lot of buzz, a lot of news, and like I said, I think we're definitely going to have a few folks that will kind of be crushed. You know, and both their predictions, and I have a feeling if some good players will be going home. Of course, this will continue on through Saturday. Groups B and C or C and D play tomorrow. Then we go quarterfinals, and I believe since it's the World Championships too. Okay, best of five for round of 16. It's all best of five. Okay,
I'll be damned.
I thought maybe it went to best of seven at the end, but I guess I was wrong. All right, anything else? How about that League of Legends, man? They were rocking some like 150,000 people watching this weekend.
Yeah.
I watched a few of those games.
Well, I don't know what the deal with
you're part of the problem. Just don't tweet it when
smart,
you do that.
Smart game advertisement, man. It's a free game that anyone can play, and so obviously there's going to bound to have a ton of followers.
I don't know. It's like I play MOBA games at a fairly competitive level as well, I guess. I was like 1780 PSR pre-reset in Han, which was like pretty good. It's not pro, but I mean,
I was
35, it's up there.
60. Yeah.
And it's a much better game than all the other MOBA games, just bar none. I've played LoL. I played Dota. Since its release, I've played Dota 2 beta. Heroes of New Earth is by far and away the best game. It's like having two communities. It's like if StarCraft 2 was split into two completely different communities, and like one group of us was still wanting Warcraft 3 to be like the super competitive game when Brood War is clearly the better game in every way, shape, and form. I just don't understand why LoL is so much bigger than Heroes of New Earth. It just doesn't make sense.
It's free and easier.
Yeah, but Heroes of New Earth went free to play after LoL had all their success.
After.
Yeah, but that's a marketing issue. Like the issue for me is like as a gamer, my entire life, Heroes of New Earth is a better game in every aspect.
Wait, let's be. What? I'm sorry that we even got on this topic, but what?
Better UI.
What?
Better interface.
What? Hold on. What in control?
Is this show called Inside the Game, or is it called Inside Multiple Other Shitty Games? You answer me that question right now. Okay?
All right,
the day we start talking about LoL, on my time, it's the day that I eat my own head.
All right. We'll have that discussion on another time, Pain User.
I just don't get it, man.
It's an interesting one.
I don't get it.
Interesting one. All right.
It's like White Wake Club became popular.
What?
So Sundance gets it, but you don't get it.
Well, I mean, they're just looking at viewership, so I understand.
This one.
You gotta understand, I'm Scott, man. I get your subtle joke, man. You got me. But honestly, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand.
All right.
But one thing I really, really like about League of Legends is that for the first time in a long time, It's a game development company that's actually focused on something other than just pushing graphics and realism to the next level, and they're having success.
Yeah,
I think is freaking awesome, because I'm not a big fan of realism.
And it's actually unfortunate that Blizzard isn't like paying a little bit more attention, because some of their efforts from an esports perspective are pretty good. I won't lie.
So I want to tell you guys how stupid this is. To encapsulate totally how stupid this is, someone in the chat said, I want In Control to get good at LOL because he'd get stomped. What? That doesn't even make, like... I want him to get good because then he'd get stomped.
Oh, man.
How did you wake up in the morning...
Just know, in his world, man, there's, like, purple elephants and cats, like, cleaning monkeys, and it's all sorts of craziness over there.
Oh, my God.
We're going to take a few phone calls. We don't have a whole lot of time because we got the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. It sounds like Orb's going to be casting with the Muslim. How many times will the word bugger be said tonight? You're going to have to tune in to find out.
He's actually the perfect caster for that situation.
What?
3 TBTs out of 4 matchups.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
It's perfect.
Interesting. That sounds pretty perfect. Okay, let's take our first call here, fellas. We've got I think we've actually got an international number here. 474, hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi.
Hi there.
Hey. Sorry, I had a stream on, so I didn't catch you saying hello. Calling from Norway, by the way, so good night.
Hello from the U.S. to Norway.
Yeah, I have a question for Machine and In Control and Pain User as well, though. Seeing a lot of two double upgrades being in Festa in set VP and set VP now. Is that becoming a standard, especially against Terrence? I heard a lot of commentators during like the matches recently when people went Muta. They seemed like they didn't think that was a good option anymore. You think the same, or what do you consider?
Well, my Zerg vs. Terran style right now is pretty, like, just double upgrade Zergling and Fester heavy, because it's much easier to control, and more than anything else, I think it's harder to just suddenly lose a game ZVT with Ling and Fester than it is with Muta. If you look away for, like, 2 seconds with, like, a ball of 30 Mutalists, and then they just get shot down by Thors or Marines, you know, you can... lose the game due to like one second mistake, whereas you're never really gonna end up doing that with like Ling, Baneling, and Fester. It's obviously a lot easier to control, and because you're getting these early upgrades, it actually transitions better into late game. And I think that's actually also why we're starting to see it against Protoss now. Stefano's style adds in a lot of Ling Bane against Protoss, and it's not really because he's looking to end the game with like mass Ling Bane and Fester. He's more doing it so he can go ahead and transition to like quick broodlords with good upgrades, and that's really kind of just what it comes down to.
Yep. In Control, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I would just like to comment that I think it's really cool that we're seeing more of that. Like, it used to just be Mutaling, Baneling, and then some like 3 or 4 cheeses that Zergs would do ZVT, but now there's definitely kind of a split down the middle. You'll still see Mutaling, Baneling, and the different styles and the cheeses, but then you'll also see Ling and Fester into either Ultralisk or Broodlord, and I think that's pretty cool. And in terms of ZVP, like Bryce said, it's just kind of the Stefano inspiration where we're seeing a lot more Ling-heavy play into anything, and I think I just like that we're still seeing Zergs innovate. I think that's when they're at their best, is when they're doing things that we can't predict just blindly.
Yeah, and one follow-up question, a short one.
Sure, real quick.
For Machine. Do you like have any like specific timings when to do the like tech switches? I always like people say that Nifesta Ling is really well. It's so safe, but at times I feel like it both can be really, really vulnerable to like when he gets the number of tanks and you're just like screwed if you don't have the broodlords at the exact time. So is that just like in game based? Do you have like tells?
Well, basically, when you're transitioning off Ling Bane because you're able to get that Infester mount early off, you're going to see a lot of Zergs teching to Hive off of 3 base, whereas if you were to see a Zerg open Muta, it would have to be 4 base because all the extra gas they've sort of put into like a indirect tech pattern. And so, yeah, you're right. You typically are going to need some sort of Tier 3 tech, whether it's like Ultra or Broodlord. And you can really, like, fairly easily get ultra like high tech off of three base and stomp those massive tank like sort of timing pushes. It's a bit harder with Broodlord. You might have to use sort of like mass stack defense in order to defend and to delay the timing, I guess you could say. But yeah, you definitely do. Once they get out a good like 12, 14 tanks, have to have that tier 3 tech, and that's kind of why at the moment I'm sort of preferring the Ultralist tech pattern.
Okay, cool. I always wonder why people would suddenly start using Ultralist. But yeah, cool. Yeah. Thanks for the answers.
Thank
and
you.
Sorry about my shaky voice.
No, take care.
Keep up the good work.
Bye bye. All right, so last week we had a fellow on the line, Rapture. If you recall, I kind of laid into Rapture a little bit, and I said, "Well, you know what, dude? You know, obviously he wasn't trying to have ill will or bad intentions." So I said, "I'll give you the opportunity to call in again next week, you know, and we'll be the bigger man here." So I'm going to go ahead and bring him on, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome Rapture to the show, to Inside the Game. What's up, man?
Hey. Gentlemen,
hello.
I would like to open with an apology to the Muslim of how I asked my question last week. I sounded very dickish, very condescending. He deserved none of that. When I get nervous, words fall out of my mouth on me, realizing how they come together. So when I forgot the Muslim's place and I asked him, kind of a bad time to ask him. So very, very much many apologies to the Muslim. I did not mean that whatsoever, and he's an amazing player. So I'd like to get that out of the way first.
Thank you, Rapture.
Second, I would like to, something that's kind of bugged me, I always felt was kind of obvious, is in the gold base problem, right, was fixed by, you know, a little bit by the mules, being nerfed a bit, but I always felt, that gold bases could be fixed a lot by, A, adding rich Vespian gas to them, to benefit the Zerg and Protoss, and B, to get them out of the middle of the map, to get somewhere out of the way, right, hard to defend out of the way. Now, for someone who actually knows what they're talking about, as in you guys, what do you feel about that?
Wait, you said put rich gas at the gold base?
So that it's not so much a Terran advantage, right? Like,
That's actually, it's interesting, but if you look at most of the maps where you're going to see those sort of gold bases, just Metalopolis, for instance, it's typically in a position that's really hard to defend that only, like, I don't want to say like Terran's the only base that can really defend it, but Terran definitely has an easier time defending it because of planetary fortresses. They can kind of just like set the base up there, put a planetary fortress there, and then it's pretty set. It's good to go. No one's really going to be engaging it. Whereas, you know, trying to defend a siege push with your gold, like your third being the gold on Metalopolis for Zerg is very difficult, so it's an interesting idea, a concept to go ahead and put the rich Vespian gas there because that obviously wouldn't benefit Terran as much, but I don't think it would really change anything.
Are you saying this instead of having the mule gather less minerals? Is that what you're saying?
No,
I think he's saying instead of, like, removing all the gold
altogether.
Yeah.
Make them...
I mean, if you make it so that the mule is just another SCV on gold, that's actually my only issue. But that was one of my biggest issues. I think the other thing, too, is, I mean, like, your idea, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but it doesn't really do anything for me either way. Like, my issue was how gold bases were used on maps. So, like, Metalopolis comes to mind, where in PvZ it's a joke. But then when you drop mules on it, was just in general a problem. So I feel like they fixed the in general problem. Now it comes down to how maps use it. So if it's like one gas that's a rich gas, cool. If it's two gases that aren't rich gases, that's cool too. So long as they fix the mule and also so that it doesn't function as like a Zerg win button. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, the second part of my question is not only adding the rich Vespian gas to replace the two normal Vespian gas, but also to put it out of the way. Like, that's a problem with a lot of maps that, you know, everybody can agree on, is when Terran sieges up that middle ground, it's so hard to push into it, as opposed to a gold base that is very out of the way. It's very hard to defend. It's away from where you would normally be. That would split your army. So that would kind of, I feel that would kind of fix it. Not just the gas and not this position, but both of them.
Well, you'd run into a problem with that, though, because if you think about it, like, I don't know. Let's use, like, Metalopolis, I guess, as like a prime example of what you're talking about, with the gold in the middle where the Terran can take it and it's like easily defensible. But if you put the gold in a far off position where it's like less accessible, then you're talking about replacing naturals and thirds with a gold base. I mean, I don't know. I think the whole problem boils down to the fact that Terran just have a distinct defender's advantage based on their unit composition and their structures. I mean, they can use structures. The wall, planetary fortress plus repair is a ridiculous defensible position. Yeah. Siege tanks are awesome. All their units are ranged and they have great synergy. And it's really easy for them to kind of hug the PF or the Shredder orbital.
Man. Get ready for that Shredder.
The Shredder better not make it.
The Shredder is going to be there, man.
So, I mean, that's the issue.
Now, and there's no way. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that's the issue, is that Terran just had... It was way too good for Terran. Like, not only is Terran the best defensive race, I feel, or at least they have a lot of great defensive utility, but then they also had mules combined with that. So, like, if you switch it to gas, it's going to create a really weird dynamic in the game, I think.
Well, that's the Terran's point of the mineral base, is to create that dynamic in the game.
Yeah, that's the thing. So like for me, think about it from a game balance perspective, right? If you're like an employee sitting at Blizzard, they're trying to balance the game more by removing golds because gold bases introduced so many frickin' variables,
yeah,
and they affected the different races in such different ways.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to honestly put anything like that, like, oh, gold, Vespeen, like, I don't think there needs to be one substitute for the other. I think the whole thing is just way too complicated.
I would want to know the arguments for gold. Like, what does a gold do to the game that people think it's worth fighting for, in my opinion? Like,
that it would be a base that may... You know, how about this in Control?
Hold on, can I answer Jeff's question? Real quick? Yeah,
sure.
Is that cool?
Sure.
All right.
I think although I want to throw mine out there before you do. Mine's going to be short and sweet. I think that maybe the thought was is that it would be a way for someone to gain an advantage after having lost one. So if you were at a gross disadvantage, a gold base could provide you a way out.
Good point.
My only other response was that it could possibly be to create areas on the map that are more prone to conflict. So maybe they're trying to introduce things that create more action or create more conflict within a game.
Yeah, and as a spectator, that's really what I look for. Like, because I'm mostly a spectator and honestly a player second. I mean, I'll be real here. But when I watch things and I see that there's a match on a map with a gold base, I look at that gold base as an area of interest because I know there's going to be very intense battles there that are very, very important. These are things that really, really matter in the game. This is a good focus point for it. So as a spectator, I love maps with gold bases.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
But I just wanted your opinion on I just wanted to see if you thought the rich Vespeen gas in the different position would help. Not going to make it perfect, but help the situation.
Help.
I mean, it would just be crazy, like...
Like I said, as a spectator, I like crazy. I love crazy games. Who doesn't love crazy games?
As a player, it's like a nightmare.
Yeah, that's the big. That's probably the big.
I know. Yeah.
You'd but see still. People like, you'd see Protoss players like fast expanding to the rich Vespeen, and then like going DT into mass freaking charge lot Archon or something. Just come out with
I can see the problem with it being out of the way is also kind of like the scrap station problem where people would expand to the gold on the bottom of the map and nobody would know it until they happened to wander down there. I'm like, oh, here's another reason this map is terrible. So, but yeah. Well, thank you for the answering my question anyway.
Thanks, Raptor.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Have a good day, gentlemen.
All right. We're getting near the end of the hour, so it's time to bring on the one and the only.
Oh, you guys! Did he redeem himself? Did he clear the slate? Did he?
As far as I'm concerned, yeah. You know,
of course.
Sure.
Everyone knew he did.
I don't hold a grudge. You know.
Yeah.
Only most of the time. No, I'm just kidding. let's take the one, the only, ladies and gentlemen, for his 33rd appearance on Inside the Cave. Give it up. For the one, the only, Goatlust! What's up, man?
Oh, yeah, not much, mate.
Yeah, how's it going?
It's going awesome, man. It's going awesome.
Oh, yeah. Having a bit of a laugh there, Machine, mate.
Yeah, man.
Machine doesn't get to experience your calls man, every week.
You talk like one of them there TV personalities.
We'll see the club now, Hunter.
Love it. What's up, man? What do you got for us this week, Goatlust? No, it's good.
Seeing as Greg's here, I thought Greg's not here. I thought I'd take the chance to ask a question that would probably be pretty shit with Greg here. So,
all right.
So I know most of you guys, or I think all of you guys, would be into games outside of StarCraft too. At least gaming's one of those things that you've just enjoyed, regardless of having pro gaming as your career. And I wanted to know. What excites you and maybe what has disappointed you in StarCraft 2 from a non-gameplay perspective? So just stepping back and looking at it from the art, the race aesthetics, the music, the game sounds, that sort of stuff, just as a game.
Interesting. Great question.
Does BattleNet count?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Who wants to go first? Pain user?
Sure. I'll just start off with BattleNet since you already mentioned it. I don't know why, Blizzard has so many amazing coders over there. Why not just have one of those amazing coders focus on integrating some form of simple internet chat relay into StarCraft 2? I want channels. I want clan channels. I want mods, private channels. Like a free-flowing chat system that can be used in and outside the game. Just, whatever. Why not just integrate that into the game?
And it does sound like maybe some features are going to be added for Diablo 3, but that's besides the fact.
It can't be that hard for them. It's obviously a thing where it's just it's not a concern of theirs. It's not something that they're focused on. That's fine. Things from Brood War. I loved the sounds from Brood War. All the sounds were, there was so much more bass, and they were super unique and just super guttural, man. Zealots were so badass. I mean, you felt like one zealot could take on a whole army, and I feel like the sounds,
and Zerglings too.
Yeah, and Zerglings as well. And I feel like the sounds in StarCraft 2 are much more quaint and less disturbing, I guess. But that was part of the beauty of Brood War. I mean, and then I feel like the AI in Brood War as well, units like Dragoons, Goliaths, every unit really, just had terrible pathing and shitty AI, to be frank. But I think if you take that, that's what made the game special, right? Those weird little micro quirks, stacking of Mutalisks, how to control those specific units in a battle situation is what made micro in Brood War so beautiful. And I do not think that creating an AI system where everything automatically balls up and micro is the spreading of units and surface area. But don't get me wrong, players in StarCraft 2 still have amazing micro. Baneling versus Stimmed Marines. Any battle situation is going to have a lot of micro, but it's different. And I feel like Brood War was much more rewarding to players who knew how to manage those unique units. So, I don't know. For me, that's it.
Machine?
For me, my number one thing, besides LAN, obviously, because we're just never, ever going to see it.
Right.
And I thought about this the other night. Watching replays with people, as odd as that sounds, those are, some of the best, times ever. Just
it's a big deal, dude.
Yeah, sitting on Brood War, with Greg being this strategy is so fucking stupid. Look at this. And then Artosis and being you're wrong,
Yeah.
It was amazing, actually. And it was just a ton of fun.
Much. It's so stupid that they don't have that. Ugh.
Yeah, that has to be added in at some point. And that's so simple. Just watching replays with people.
There's no argument against it. There's no.
There actually is none. You cannot come up with a valid reason. You can't.
Nothing. There is no adult in those Blizzard offices sitting there going,
"Tell you what,
if I see one more fucking request for shared replay, okay? I didn't I didn't drive to Blizzard every day, okay? So that people could watch replays together. Didn't do it. I mean, it is so... How many stupid leagues have we seen two casters sit there and go, you ready? You ready?
Okay. Yeah, okay. 3, 2, 1 Oh, wait. Stop. Oh, wait. You're 5 seconds ahead.
Oh, no, you hit it too fast. Go back. You ready? There's that program that we had to make so that replays still work. And then sometimes that doesn't work that well either.
What do you guys think? I want to hear what you two have to say. Actually, you too, Wheat. I want to hear what all of you have to say about. Okay, so for me, like,
well, hold on. I mean, I've taken everything that you guys have said into perspective, and I really think that you're overlooking. Because keep in mind, Goatless said that he's looking at things from, you know, sort of an outside of the game perspective, even though all those things encompass that.
But he asked a question.
Right. I think once I say it, you guys will be like, of course. But I really felt like the cup size of Sarah Kerrigan was not properly represented from Brood War to StarCraft II. And I don't feel like it gets enough attention. So I just want to throw that out there and make people, you know, remember that.
I do appreciate the Trisha Helfer voice. I think that's the start.
Yeah.
But what we really need... Dad ass.
Dad ass.
Sarah Kerrigan. Thinking of like knee-high tentacled boots kind of thing. Okay. And then a little bit of
that ass.
The Zerg butt.
Yeah. I agree with everything that you guys say. And you know, like, I think you could say the removal of units, but I've never once said, God, I wish that Colossus looked different. Or, God, I wish that Phoenix looked different. You know?
Really?
I do.
Out of that Warhound, though.
Well, no, I don't. Have you?
We've already bitched about that. Give me. I need time. We've got like
model skin.
Yeah.
20 minutes. You got to give me to answer Goatless' question.
Okay, go for it then.
You start off with the most important one to me. The Ultralisk does not fucking look like an Ultralisk. I don't like it. I do not like it.
I don't either.
It's a living battering ram in Brood War. It was a freaking muscled just. Carnifex running down the path, tearing shit open. In StarCraft II, I can actually picture myself stroking it from head to butt like a dog. I could pet it. I'd be like, "You are my Ultralisk. You're so adorable." And it's like it would like lean up against me and it would like look up at me. Like I can picture that because it looks so cartoony and stupid. I don't like it. Yeah.
The little pea-sized head too.
I got you.
Just sitting there hugging stuff.
Ultra should be throwing shit everywhere, cleaving Marines.
Sound like a war elephant, and it should make the screen rumble when they move. Like you could have done so many things with those.
Yeah.
And what they did is they like looked at these awesome alien renditions that they're directly copying from other games, and they're like, how can we make this children friendly? How can they look at that and think to themselves? If I put a leash on it, it'll love me like any other dog would. And I am so upset about how bad that looks. Where do I go from here? I mean, there's so many different things outside of this. Like, I want Blizzard to step up their involvement in StarCraft II. Okay, I would like the Sandlot tournament. I've talked about this before. Was one of the coolest tournaments in Brood War history. It was underrated. It wasn't a big deal. It was like $1,000 total prize pool. But it involved the entire community picking players, valuing players, drafting players, and then fielding these rosters against other community websites. It got everyone involved. It was literally one of the coolest ideas ever. And it was 100% Blizzard original. Like they came out and said, hey, we're doing the Sandlot tournament. And here's what you do. And everyone was like, that is the coolest thing ever. And they're like, we know. We're fucking Blizzard. That's what we do. We make shit amazing. And I am so sad that doesn't happen. Like, and then we have to spend time talking about LAN, even though it's never going to happen.
Right.
In the off chance that DBs is watching this right now, how embarrassed are you when you host a tournament and on your giant freaking Blizzard screen, the lag screen comes up? Because they actually... don't show the camera to him, but here's the look. He's in the audience. He's got that smile, but then it comes up, and you can see his eyes glass over, and he goes, and he dies inside a little bit.
I'm still happy, guys. His smile on my face is great.
And I would have Dr. Lightman from Lie to Me put his face right up against Dustin Browder's and go, shame. You're feeling ashamed. What's that? Disgust. Yeah, right. I can see the disgust on your face, too. And now you're angry because I'm dead fucking right on this, aren't I? And then he'd be like, get away from me. And that's exactly what would happen. Because he knows it's stupid shit.
Yep.
I'm kind of sad Machine took the replay one. That's why I hijacked it a little bit, because that's actually the dumbest thing on the face of the earth. It makes coaching better. It makes casting better.
Yeah.
It makes the user experience better. If I'm a newbie and I can watch a replay with my other newbies, like, the thing about that is it transcends all levels. Like, it's not.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
It's absolutely like,
yeah,
hey,
that's
guys,
true. It's not a, we're releasing this and it's only going to be used by the pro community. That is actually probably one of the best points that's been made here about this.
But like, okay, but the thing is, and Jeff just touched on this a little bit, is like, that is the beauty of the whole system. Watching replays with friends and analyzing them, no matter what level you're at, those, a group of 10 newbies could get their hands on the replays from MLG a week prior, and they could all sit down and they could analyze those together, and they could get better together as a group and bring their different ideology into it. And as of now, it's like, 1, 2, 3, go. It's like, oh, and then you're not in the same game, you can't type to one another. It's just like, it's so frustrating. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand it all. And then the student-teacher thing is huge. Giving lessons, I mean, good God, the amount of times I wish I could just host a game and show someone a replay of specifically what I'm talking about. It's just like, come on. You got to send each other the replays and then start at the same time. And it's just like, what's the point? And if people are circumventing these issues that you have, not only that, for casting as well, try dual casting. Me and Wheat had to get set up with time synchronizers, and I had to like lock into your IP and judge how, you know, the game and the speed up and slow down. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. They need to look at something that's actually hindering the progress of their game in a competitive environment, and it's just a small little hurdle, and it keeps presenting roadblocks, you know, in different areas.
Goat Lust, my next one, marketing strategy. Okay, you go back to the beginning of StarCraft II, and you announce Wings of Liberty at StarCraft II. We're freaking fantastic. We're really excited about this. That's it. And then you know what? Like a year and a half later, if you're ready to do it, okay, if you've got it prepared to do, you announce the new version of StarCraft II, Heart of the Swarm. It's this add-on. It's like Brood War. You're going to freaking love it. People get excited. Their minds blow. But instead, people are going, you said Heart of the Swarm would be out right now, and it's not out, which means you're inept. And then they go, well, we announced it, but we can do what we want. And why? Why take your own thunder and cram it into a place where thunder doesn't belong? And neuter your own marketing strategy. What possible, what group of people were sitting there saying, you know what?
Activision, unfortunately.
I actually think, instead of creating hype and announcing exciting things, we could do the most boring thing humanly possible and tell people our 10-year plan for this game right from the beginning. Can you imagine if Call of Duty 1 comes out and they go, Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Guess what? We're going to make fucking 35 of these. This is just the first one. People would be like, 35 Call of Duties?
Well, the problem is that, you know, from one perspective, it's like they're doing that to cater to this. Oh, my God. It's like this story is so big that we need 3 fucking games to tell it, you guys. Like, this would be a 1,000-page novel, man. That's why we need... You know, 3. I mean, honestly, that's kind of how it's being, how it did hit marketing.
I guess. And
so, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, though. So, anyway, we're really short on time. So, In Control, I want you to be able to finish.
We'll do it again later. Goat Lust, ask the same question every week for the next 10 years.
Good one, though, Goat Lust.
Yeah.
That was solid.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Yes.
The last couple have been real solid. So, you're putting a little bit of thought into the question process.
We like that.
Oh, yeah, well, when you know you're going to get asked every week, you can invest some time into it, can't you?
Good.
That's why every show needs a goat lust, isn't it?
That's right. That's
there
right.
You go.
Every show does need a goat lust, there's no doubt about it. All right, man, thanks so much for your call, right. Dude. Take care.
Thank you. Yeah, catch you guys later.
Yep, bye-bye.
See ya.
Every show needs a goat lust.
I love that guy.
That should be our actually like mantra.
Every show needs a goat lust. There's something about his name. It's just like
goat lust too. Oh, you guys don't see it. It also comes up with this like awesome. Like he's got a goat lust. Like it's like a goat lust logo, dude. I mean, I don't know what else to say, dude. It's just it's a goat lust logo. The next time he's on, I'll show you guys. I'll show you guys next week. Don't let me forget. All right, we got to wrap things up. We got the Evil Geniuses Master Cup coming up next. I believe it's Complexity versus Empire. Empire, one of the final four teams of last season. And so that should certainly be a good one. I'll be DeMuslim and Orb holding it down there at the EG Studios. And so let's wrap things up. We'll shoot on over to X6 Pain User to kick us off.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks, Weed, for having me. Thanks, Machine, for coming on the show. You're always welcome. I love your input. Thanks to Check 6, my team, and our sponsors, TT Esports, Pure Track, End of Reality, Pure Voice Gainer, and Gamers Uniform. And I don't really have anything else to say. Watch StarCraft, enjoy, and have a good week.
Thanks, sir. Wow. EG Machine.
Always a pleasure working with you, man. It's great being on here. Taylor, great working with you. Jeff, not so much with you, man.
I hate you too, dude.
Okay.
No love.
Well, thank you guys for watching this. You know, make sure you follow me on Twitter, @MachineUSA. I have a Facebook fan page if any of you use that. And I'd like to thank my sponsors. Do we have to list all of them, Jeff? All right, Intel Extreme Motherboard, SteelSeries, Monster Energy Drinks, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, Sapphire, Six Pool Gaming, InWin, Gunner, Slappa, and Split Reason.
It's actually Intel and Intel Extreme
Motherboard. Oh, right. Intel and Intel Extreme Motherboard. Yeah. Thank you very much, Father.
Mm-hmm. No problem, son. Wheat, is it my turn? I'd like to thank DJ Wheat for being the amazing host that he is. I think not enough people thank you, Weed. And, you know, you deserve the thanks. You deserve the thanks. I'm trying to take as long as I can. I'm kidding. Also, of course, our team, Evil Geniuses, our sponsors, Intel, SteelSeries, King Sniper X, Monster Energy, Beyond Game, Sapphire. I think I actually just did them all. Who did I forget?
And when Gunner, Slap, and Split Reason.
Oh, no, we don't thank them. They don't pay enough money yet.
Oh, I see.
I will be at MLG Columbus. Please do come say hi. I'm really excited to say, too, that there's a couple of casting opportunities that I've taken coming up pretty soon. Still don't know why a certain league hasn't announced it yet. It's nothing permanent, but it's just a little casting gig that's going to be a lot of fun. And I like casting. It's a lot of fun. I get to do another part of StarCraft 2 that I don't normally get to do. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
I like it.
And then I will also be at PAX East with Mr. DJ Wheat. Of course, this does mean I won't be able to go to IPL4, which is really too bad. It kind of sucks. But there's actually a lot of us that are going to be going to, I think, the Boston Barcraft to watch the IPL4 finals.
That's right.
I can't confirm 100%, but I'm going to do everything I can to be there. So if you're in the area and you want to say hi, please do come and say hi. We're also doing a live Save the Game there as well. And in general, I'll be at the Kingston booth kicking some ass. I've actually already planned out some awesome strategies, some awesome celebrations. It should be absolutely amazing.
Awesome.
Artosis will be there as well. And yeah, just follow me on Twitter, EG In Control. My stream is In Control TV on Twitch TV, and just check it out. We you know, a lot of ladder, a lot of EG practice, all that good stuff. So thanks everybody.
Thank you, Bryce, Jeff.
Did you
machine? Did, what pain user?
Did you mention your Twitter?
Bryce? Yeah, @MachineUSA.
Oh.
Man, I didn't. So concerned. Oh, @PainUser for those that didn't. There we go. You can follow us on Twitter @DGWeed, @PainUser, MachineUSA, and EG In Control. We'd love to communicate with you guys. So thank you so much for tuning in. Tomorrow is Live on 3. And IEM, of course, continues tomorrow, so we hope that you guys will be watching. It starts about 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and they are doing rebroadcasts. So if you don't have the opportunity to miss it, they do play it in full immediately following. So it's always good knowledge to have. I want to thank our sponsors, SteelSeries, Sixpool Gaming, and Domokun. And with that being said, guys, we'll see you next time on another episode of Inside the Game. Coming up next, the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup with the Muslim and Orb. It's Complexity versus Empire. We'll see you next time. Peace.